This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. With summer almost gone and fall fast approaching, it's time for states to get ready for the second round of open enrollment under the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare. Today, Where We Live, we're checking in with some healthcare experts, reporters, and consumers to see just how successful this first period of open enrollment was. We'll take a look at what some states are doing to prepare for this next enrollment period. We want to hear from you. Did you sign up for insurance on the state's exchange? Are you planning to during this enrollment period? We would love to hear some of your Obamacare stories today in the program. Call 860-275-7266. Again, our phone number is 860-275-7266. Let us know if you saved money, if it cost you money, if indeed this was an easy process, and what you think about Obamacare moving forward. You can always email Where We Live at WNPR. We're taking your comments, as always, on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Joining us by phone today is Jeff Cohen. We just talked to him the other day about local Hartford election, but he also covers health and healthcare for WNPR and occasionally for NPR. He joins us by phone. Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Morning, John.
And Sarah Varney is here. She's a reporter for Kaiser Health News, who's reporting you also here on NPR about healthcare quite frequently. Sarah, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
And before we get to some phone calls and some stories, Jeff, let's start with you and get a sense of how Access Health CT thinks the first enrollment period went, how this first phase of Obamacare is done for the state. Kevin Counihan and Governor Malloy recently held a press event. They seem to suggest they're doing really, really well.
Sure. So it's always good to remind ourselves of some of the big picture goals of the Affordable Care Act. So it's affordable care. So one of those, and there's patient protection, but let's leave that aside. There's affordable care. So the questions are more people insured under the Affordable Care Act? Are there people who were previously uninsured who are now insured as a result of the Affordable Care Act? That's one big question for a long time that didn't have an answer, and I'll come back to that in a second. The second one has to do with affordability. The care, the insurance that they have, is it affordable? Is it something? Is it? And that's a relative question, also, right? It's based on what you're paying, based on your individual income. So affordability is not a constant. But affordability also has to do with what that plan that you have now on the individual market costs today versus what it would have cost before the Affordable Care Act was around and what it would have covered. So the answer isn't necessarily easy in terms of how is Connecticut doing, but there is one good answer that the state is pointing to, and what they say is that of the roughly 257,000 people who signed up for insurance under Obamacare in Connecticut the first year around, half of them, or 53% of them actually, were uninsured when they enrolled. That's all coming from polling that they've done. And that's, you know, if that number holds, and they have reason to believe that it will, and that it's a true estimate of the uninsured, that's a pretty big deal, right? The question long was, certainly from critics, was the Affordable Care Act just bringing insurance to people who maybe had it and just switched from a job and dropped it at their job and went and got it somewhere else, or that it was just a more convenient thing to do? Well, in this case, the state found that over half the people who signed up in the state didn't have insurance before, and that's something that they're pretty proud of.
As far as the costs that the people who have signed up for, you mentioned this idea of affordability. What can you tell us at this point about this, Jeff? What are the stories?
Well, you know, I haven't done a whole lot of cost comparison myself. There are a couple of things that where cost comes into play. One is the market, to a certain extent, can take care of huge variations in price. What do I mean by that? Well, keep in mind that the Affordable Care Act is not government insurance. It's not the government having an insurance policy that you buy. It's essentially the government setting up a marketplace where private insurers come and sell their products, and you as the consumer can go and choose what you want from among those products. Last year, Connecticut had three insurers offer plans. One of them was a new insurer, a co-op, Healthy CT. It was formed in part by doctors from the Connecticut State Medical Society. They had rates that were pretty high relative to the other two big commercial insurers who are offering plans on the exchange. So what happened to those high rates? Well, they only got 3% of the market share. People price shopped and frankly went for the cheaper plan. So that is all sort of correcting itself this second time around, as because the other lever that's out there, other than the market, there's another lever, and that is, in Connecticut at least, state insurance regulators. And some of the bigger insurers have come in for rate increase requests and have gotten denied. So there are those levers out there to help keep price under control. But remember, this is still the private market. This is the private market for health insurance. And the market economists out there are probably pretty happy that this is the sort of thing that lets the market decide what the price will be.
Jeff Cohen covers healthcare for WNPR and also for a partnership between NPR and Kaiser Health News. We're getting a kind of Obamacare checkup as we get ready for the next open enrollment period under the Affordable Care Act. We're going to take some of your calls in a moment at 860-275-7266 with your experiences. We'll turn now to Sarah Varney, who covers this issue for Kaiser Health News. She's in California today. We've heard a little bit from Jeff about how Connecticut's doing. They seem very, very pleased. Does it line up with other states that you've been covering, Sarah, and the national health care plan run for so many states?
Sure. Well, I think it really, there's a couple different factors to look at whether or not a state was successful or not. So there were really a very small number of states that were like Connecticut in that they had their own state-based marketplace, so that the state of Connecticut was very involved in organizing and running the marketplace and marketing and branding this one website. Colorado was another state that did that. Kentucky did that. Washington State did that. Of course, California did that as well. All those states also, though, expanded Medicaid, which, as we're seeing, is a really big part of whether or not the numbers of uninsured really drop. So I've been in Washington State. Of course, I've been in California. I've also been in Mississippi, where it was a dismal failure. So that sort of provides us a nice way to reflect on what worked and what didn't work. But I can tell you, in parts of Seattle and certain hospitals, you know, they've had their uninsurance rate drop from, say, 20% down to 2%. A big part of that, of course, are some people who are getting these private plans on the insurance exchange, the Washington Insurance Exchange. But a lot of it is the Medicaid expansion. And you really see that when you go to a place like Mississippi, where, you know, they only had 61,000 people sign up for health insurance, people who are eligible. It's about 21% of the, or 20% or so of the people who were actually eligible signed up. And a big part of that, a big part of people who are left out, are the folks who are in what's called the Medicaid gap. They earn too much to apply for the Medicaid program and not enough to be able to purchase insurance on the exchange. So in Mississippi, you saw not a very well-coordinated effort, in part because you had a Republican governor and state legislature was very opposed to the Affordable Care Act. There were a lot of groups who were hesitant to even get involved. There was a real lack of coordination among the two groups that did get the big federal grants to help to basically go out and muster up an enrollment program. But also what they found was that so many people would have qualified for Medicaid had the state expanded Medicaid, but didn't, and were really out of luck. I mean, I was in the Mississippi Delta talking to some folks there, and they would say, you know, we would have 10 people in a row would come in and we couldn't do anything for them. They'd all fall into the Medicaid gap. And that really, to the extent that they were able to get any momentum going in a place like Mississippi, it really just killed momentum. People said, this is a waste of time. What am I doing here? This whole thing is it's not for us.
Let's go to some phone calls and we'll get some more stories from around the country from Sarah Varney and Jeff Cohen. But let's talk to Thomas in New Haven first. Hi, Thomas. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for the call. I'm an ER doctor. I practice in Connecticut, and I've seen quite a large increase in Medicaid patients in my practice, which we're happy to take care of in the emergency department. But a lot of these patients have told me that the wait lists to get into the clinics that accept the Medicaid insurance are very long. And I'm wondering if the folks at Access Connecticut or others are aware of the utilization and whether this is actually improving or saving the state money and improving care. And I'll take the answer off the air.
Thomas, thank you very much for your phone call. Jeff Cohen, did you hear his question? What do you say?
I did. There are a couple responses, and I'm not an expert on this. I apologize, but a couple things I'll say. One, when we say access Health CT, right? That's the name of the organization. Access to what? Well, in this case, the first hurdle is access to insurance. not access to care. That's a big difference. It's an important difference, and access to insurance is a very big thing. The question is, once you have insurance, where can you go and take it? A lot of doctors don't take Medicaid. You don't have to take Medicaid. And clinics do take Medicaid, but it's hard to get it. Sometimes it's hard to get a patient. We've talked about this recently, because specifically when it comes to Medicaid, but again, on Medicaid, you don't have to take the plans. But some doctors also don't have to take plans under the Affordable Care Act, because they don't always reimburse at commercial rates. They reimburse at less than commercial rates. On the open market. Access to actual care is a pretty big deal. That said, in Connecticut, if I recall from a press conference last week, Kevin Counihan did say that because reimbursement rates under Medicaid have gone up, at least temporarily, and someone correct me if I'm wrong, under the Affordable Care Act in Connecticut, reimbursement rates to primary care physicians, I think, more doctors have signed up to take Medicaid since the Affordable Care Act has been in place. So the doctor brings up a good point. Access to a physician is still a very big issue, even if you have insurance when you didn't before.
Well, and I'd love, Sarah Varney, for you to jump in on this. So this idea of more patients coming in through private insurance, through the exchanges, but doctors getting slightly lower rates, maybe an increase in Medicaid reimbursements for doctors, but a much heavier caseload of Medicaid patients. And that's just here in Connecticut. I'm sure that some of these same trends are going around nationwide. What do you say to Thomas in New Haven, the doctor?
Well, I would say there's two things. One is, remember that there was a lot of funding both in the Affordable Care Act, but also in previous bills that came out of Congress that drove a lot of money to community clinics. So these are federally qualified health centers that are really set up to deal with low-income populations. They're placed inside those communities. They have social workers. They have ties to, housing services, the kinds of things that folks who are really struggling need. So, this idea that all of the newly insured Medicaid folks are going to go to private doctors, I think is something of a fallacy. It's not really the way the Affordable Care Act was designed. I mean, a lot of these folks were. The expectation was that we're going to give a bunch of money, billions and billions and billions of dollars, to these federally qualified health centers. They're going to expand their capacity, which they absolutely have over the last couple of years. And we're going to hope that a lot of folks will call their local community clinic a medical home as opposed to their local doctor. So that's one idea, is that it's trying to educate people who sign up for Medicaid that they don't necessarily have to have their local doctor as their primary care physician, but instead can go to one of these community clinics. The second thing, though, is the physician is absolutely right in that a lot of the people that I have met, whether it's in California or in Washington or certainly in Mississippi, a lot of these people have never had insurance. Maybe the last time they had insurance was when they were 18 and they aged out of Medicaid, in the 80s. So they don't really understand how insurance works. They don't, if they have a private plan, they don't understand what a deductible is. Even if they have Medicaid, there's no real sense of, oh, I go to a physician for this, or I go to a primary care doctor for an annual checkup. A lot of folks are working in order to qualify. You're still very low income to qualify for Medicaid. So a lot of these folks you find are working two jobs. They might have a job in the morning working at a janitorial service, and then in the evening they're working at a restaurant. So this question of when they go to access care, how they get there, is a real challenge. And when you have these navigators, right, these folks who are around the country who are certified to help people sign up for the Affordable Care Act or for Medicaid, help them sort of direct them into the Medicaid system, they're already having to cover so much ground that having to then do a separate task of teaching them, okay, this is how you use insurance, this is the appropriate use of an emergency room, for instance, is not really something that they can take on. And I've certainly heard in the emergency rooms here in California, there has been a big increase in the number of Medicaid patients, newly insured Medicaid patients going into our emergency rooms, and this effort of trying to say, okay, we need to get you in with a primary care physician, whether that's a private doctor or whether that's somebody at a community clinic, and really, in a sense, teaching people how to use insurance.
And we're going to continue with Sarah Varney and Jeff Cohen taking a few more of your phone calls before our break. I'll just say that hard job that the navigators have, even in a place like Connecticut, getting people insurance and then trying to help them through the system to get coverage. As you reported earlier, it's even that much harder for the navigators to do their jobs in states like Mississippi, where the state government's not making it easy for them. So I guess at least we have that going for us. So let's go to Pamela in Griswold. Hello, Pamela.
Hi, John. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that I used to work for Cigna as a programmer, and I fully understand the way that the different parts of the different questions that you have to answer work. And it took me 3 calls to be able to sign up and actually get the answers that I needed regarding the deductibles and how they worked. But what I really called about was that in 2007, I became an independent contractor, and I took on my own personal insurance. And over the course of the next 7 years, my insurance went from $468 to $869. And every time I got an increase that was a double-digit increase, I was told, oh, we're preparing for this new health care program. So then it came time for me to renew my health insurance, and I was told, oh, we canceled your program. You're going to have to go with one of the state programs. So I endured these increases that were almost 50% of my original premium in order to get my program in line with the state programs, and what I have now is not near as good as what I had. And I was just summarily canceled and told my plan no longer exists.
And you were told your plan no longer exists because it didn't conform with the new law, or because the company you were with just decided to drop that plan? What's that?
It was actually better than the new law. The only thing that it didn't have, I'm 60 years old, and I didn't need to have the gynecological coverage for pregnancies. That's the only part that wasn't covered. And because I don't need it, and it wasn't in my plan, and I had the opportunity to opt out of paying for it because it wasn't in my plan,
yeah,
then my plan was canceled.
Pamela, thank you for sharing that story.
I'm only one of 50,000 people. And there were articles on the web that said that Blue Cross Blue Shield in Connecticut canceled 25% of the enrollees in order to get them to enroll in the state plan.
And I'd love to get some thoughts from our reporters, either Jeff or Sarah. I mean, these are the sorts of stories we do hear from people. Any thoughts about what's being done to solve a problem like this? People who are on insurance pay for a number of years higher rates to, as she says, get ready for Obamacare and then have their plan just drop them.
I'll jump in.
Well,
that's
I would
a
say
great
if you
call,
look back
and it's hard to know.
Okay, you go ahead, Jeff.
Sorry, I'm sorry. It's hard to know from where. That's a great call, I said, and it's hard to know from where I sit how many people had that similar problem as the caller did. What you hear if you ask you hear the opposite sort of if you ask some of the insurers or the Access Health CT probably or backers of the Affordable Care Act in terms of why this plan might cost more than your old plan. And that general answer is because it covers more and is more comprehensive. Now, that's not what we heard from the caller. So I think there's obviously a lot of variation in how this rolls out and how it affects individual people.
Sarah?
Well, I would just say that, you know, if you really look back at the history of, obviously the caller worked for Cigna, so they know this very, she knows this very well, that when you look at the history of rate increases in private insurance, they've been going up double digits for many, many, many years, even before when President Obama was still living in Hawaii. So I think what ended up happening was it became a very convenient excuse for the insurance companies to say the reason we're raising these rates is because of Obamacare. You know, it's easy to kind of have that be the taxi in a sense. And I'm sure there is some truth to some of these particularly skinny plans, which doesn't sound like that's what the caller had. But certainly when you go from a very skinny plan to something with more benefits, you know, the cost is going to go up. But I think if you look more broadly at insurance trends, you will see that, in fact, there's been a leveling off of premium increases. Some of that's due to the economic recession that we had. People use fewer healthcare resources, and insurance companies understand that, and they don't raise their rates as much. But you will always have, within one insurance company like Cigna, a few books of business or many books of business where they will raise the rates pretty significantly, and it just depends on who's in that book of business. I mean, I will say one of the things that I think a helpful thing that economists would say why the private insurance market wasn't working, and I'm sure the caller knows this as well, is the insurance companies had this long history of, in a sense, creating a creating certain books of business where they would stick in a poison pill. So they might end up having a group of self-employed people who, you know, they all, so the company pooled them all together, and somebody in that pool would have very high healthcare costs, you know, for whatever reason. What they end up doing is they then increase the rates. I mean, in some cases, 150%, 200%. And it's purposeful. The idea is that we're going to make this so expensive that ultimately these people are going to drop it. We can close that book of business, in a sense, open a store somewhere else. So that kind of gaming of the system is now come to an end under the Affordable Care Act. They can't do that. All the people who are buying these plans are all now under technically what's called one book of business for the insurance company. So they can no longer manipulate separate pools of insurance for individual subscribers.
Sarah Varney covers health care and health news for Kaiser Health News. You hear her reporting on NPR a lot. She's also got a brand new book out called XL Love, How the Obesity Crisis is Complicating America's Love Life. She'll be talking to Colin McEnroe about that soon on his program. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Jeff Cohen joined us as well. He covers health care for WNPR and for NPR's collaboration with Kaiser Health News. Thank you so much, Jeff.
You're welcome, John.
When we come back, we're going to be talking more about community health centers and their role in this. We're also going to be hearing from some more people, and we want to hear your stories. 860-275-7266. You can also tweet at us where we live, like Neil did. I was uninsured, working lousy job. Obamacare was a positive factor in my decision to quit, start my own business. Got a good Anthem plan. You can keep those tweets coming at where we live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we're getting a checkup of sorts on Obamacare as we get ready for another open enrollment period. We're going to see how the state's health care exchange has been doing. We've gotten a little sense of how it's done compared to the rest of the nation with reporter Sarah Varney and Jeff Cohen just a few minutes ago. Connecticut seems to be doing better, but there are an awful lot of stories about people trying to sign up for health care, some having success, some not. We want to hear your stories. 860-275-7266. Has the Affordable Care Act changed your life in some meaningful way? We're also taking tweets at Where We Live, including this one from Mike. I'm a 27-year-old cancer survivor who used Access Health CT. I got a healthy CT plan, a healthy Connecticut plan, and kept my doctor. Insurance is always greater than out of pocket. That's a tweet from Mike. You can continue your tweets at Where We Live and also call us 860-275-7266, like Betty from Voluntown. Hi, Betty. Go ahead.
Hi. I want to talk about a success story for a very close family member of ours who recently found herself without health insurance and has numerous health issues. So we're very familiar with the community health center system, and we have some really great systems over here in eastern Connecticut. So we accessed our local community health system, which is located out of Norwich, but has a branch that's very close to where we live in Voluntown. So we went over there, and pretty easy to get an appointment, and saw a very compassionate physician there. And right away, she found out how to access Husky-D, and this was amazing to me because I know there have been some Medicaid nightmare stories in our state. We went over to sign up. She spent a half hour with an intake specialist, and a half hour later, she came out with her Husky-D card.
Mm.
And then a week later, her hard card was in the mail. And I am just so delighted about that. I mean, this just saves us from going to ERs and just worrying about the cost of health care, and it just makes it wonderful for us. So I'm just delighted, and I'm really looking forward to see the cost savings for for ERs.
Yeah.
I want to see how that will impact hospitals. One other thing I want to touch on
quickly,
real quick. I want to talk about Connecticut's expansion of nurse practitioners, and I am really proud of that. I'm an advanced practice nurse, not a nurse practitioner, and I'm just so happy that Connecticut has finally advance the role for nurses in terms of increasing access for folks who need health.
Yeah, especially when we're hitting this point at which we need care for so many more people. Betty, thank you so much for sharing your story and for sharing a success story as well. I appreciate that. I want to turn to Deb Poland, who's the Director of Government Affairs and Media Relations for the Community Health Center Association of Connecticut. Deb, welcome to our studio, and thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me on, John.
And you just heard a very positive story about community health centers from Betty, which must make you feel good. Maybe you can talk a little bit more more about the role that the health centers are playing in getting people signed up, getting people the actual care that they need.
Absolutely. In fact, as part of the Affordable Care Act, the federal government funded all of the community health centers across the country to provide an outreach and enrollment services to their population and then anybody in the community. So here in Connecticut, we have about 100, they're called certified application counselors, just to add another acronym and vocabulary term into the mix. And these certified application counselors are working at the 14 community health centers across the state and helping people, just like Betty explained, with enrolling in either a plan through Access Health CT or in Husky.
Even with this expansion and these folks, are there enough, I guess I'll use the example, boots on the ground to really get everyone signed up at the health center level? We heard stories about other people going directly to hospitals, not having as much success. Do you have the personnel needed to handle the influx?
To provide the access to care?
Yes.
That's something that we're trying to scale up. And I think Jeff Cohen mentioned earlier that there was, or maybe Sarah mentioned that there was money also in the Affordable Care Act to provide health centers with resources to expand their facilities and open new sites. And that's been going on all over the country, including here in our state. One of the challenges always is getting providers and getting providers to work in health centers and to stay working in the community. We think we've done a pretty good job with that, especially with the primary care. There are always going to be challenges getting access to specialists.
We want to get to the phones again at 860-275-7266 and hear some of your stories. We have a call here from Edna. Edna is a Connecticut resident who's offered to share some of her experiences with the state's health insurance exchange system, and she joins us now by phone. Edna, welcome to Where We Live. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if you can, could you tell us your story and maybe why it was you were seeking to get insurance and what the process was like for you?
Well, my problem wasn't so much the process in getting insurance. It was after I got it of some of the problems that I incurred and some of the out-of-pocket costs that I incurred while I was on that insurance since March 1st, which was the open enrollment period.
To tell me about those costs. What did you struggle with?
Well, this is the thing, is that every time I went to the doctors, I got an out-of-pocket cost bill to the point where my deductible was high, over $6,000. And it was basically based on the fact that when I picked out my insurance with the healthcare administrator that helped me through the clinic, the local clinic that's here, he was very informative in letting me know what was out there as far as the marketplace. And based on my healthcare needs, I made a decision of what plan I want to go with and also my financial state. So I picked out an insurance that was affordable as far as paying premiums per month. But the more affordable as far as lower the premium, the higher the deductible. So what I found out is when I would go to the doctors, and at the time my health care needs was basically physicals, you know, the annual checkups, OBGYN, et cetera, et cetera. But I didn't foresee a problem with my health when I had to go to the emergency room and found out that the hospital where the emergency room that I attended was not affiliated or was not part of the network hospitals, covered by my insurance. So I get a bill that's like $4,000 in addition to all the other bills I got from all the other appointments, which weren't of an emergency nature. So basically, I ended up meeting my deductible over $6,000. Now I'm being told that now the insurance is going to cover everything until January 1st. So what I'm doing now is cramming in all these doctor's appointments so that I don't have to have any more out-of-pocket costs.
So that you don't have to do this same thing over again.
In the meantime, I'm $6,000 in debt. And, you know, again, I remind you that the reason why I picked out the insurance is, one, it was affordable for my fixed income to pay that amount, but on the inside, the deductible, I've already met it. That means I'm $6,000 in debt.
Well, Edna, you didn't have insurance beforehand, or did you have a different plan?
I had a different plan. This is the other thing, is when I was working, you know, I was part of a COBRA. So the premiums were pretty much affordable because it was kind of a group plan through my employer. Now I'm on an individual plan, and it was costing me more. And that's what gave me the reasoning to go to try out the Obamacare plan, because they were telling me that they had affordable insurance there.
Well,
they do have affordable insurance, but the deductibles are high. So when the premiums are low and you're paying it within what you make as far as your income.
Absolutely.
Deductibles are high. And then if the deductibles are low, the premiums are high. So either way, you're paying,
Right, that's the thing, and you just have to roll the dice and hope that you don't have a bad medical year. I'm just going to ask Deb Poland, this is the sort of story.
Even if I didn't have a bad medical year, I still had out-of-pocket costs. That's what I'm saying, is that I had one incident where I went to the emergency room and had that $4,000 cost. But even before that, while I was seeing the doctor just for regular visits, I was still incurring out-of-pocket costs.
I just like to hear from Deb Poland a little bit, because this is probably the sort of story that you hear an awful lot, Deb.
Yes, it's actually, it's quite a challenge, and Edna laid it out very well, which is if you choose a plan that has a low monthly premium, you're going to end up with a high deductible. If you can afford a plan for a higher monthly premium, then you're going to have a lower deductible. And until you meet your deductible, you're essentially uninsured. You feel uninsured, except now you're paying out of pocket every month for insurance and not getting the benefits of it. The health centers are actually a great resource for this because they continue to see people regardless of their insurance status. So if it is a primary care type situation, then a health center will see Edna, and we've talked, so she knows this, regardless of insurance status.
Okay.
But if it's something more complex, then it will be a challenge.
But so let's just talk through Edna's situation here, Deb. So let's say she comes to you at a community health center and says, look, this has been my experience this year. I would like to have a different experience next year. How can you help her get to that level so that she's not, as she says, $6,000 in debt just because of one emergency room visit and your basic stuff that you need to do every year?
We'll do everything that we can to look at what the plans are for 2015 and match up consumers with the plan that's going to best fit their needs, their personal situation based on their income and family size. There are tax credits from the federal government for people who qualify, and that can help. But for the folks who fall slightly above that income level where they're eligible for the tax credits, it can be very challenging.
So, Edna, hopefully you're able to get some help. What have you been doing to prepare for this next year and maybe get health insurance that's going to be more affordable for you?
Well, this is the thing, is that I'm already on the bronze plan, so I don't think I can go any lower, with another insurance. And even if I did, if there was a lower insurance that I can go to, again, the deductible would be very, very high. The other problem that I'm having, too, is that prescription-wise, one prescription, and because Anthem doesn't have any way to make an electronic premium payment, I have to make the call in to Anthem to make the payment, and they guarantee that the payment will be processed in 3 business days. That is not even the case. What I've come across, and this is every month since I've had this insurance, is that I make the premium payment by phone, even talking to customer service, getting a letter confirming that I made the payment by phone, but then I find out that I cannot fill my prescription, which I normally do at the beginning of the month, because that payment has not been processed. So they don't process anything, even doctor's bills. They don't process anything until that premium payment is received. And it's a nightmare because every month I'm getting a letter being threatened that my insurance is going to be canceled. Even though I have a 15-day grace period, it's not even the 15th day. We're talking about the first week of the month when I'm getting these letters.
Well, Edna, thank you very much for sharing your story. And I really wish you a more successful year this year in hoping to get some of these problems solved. And Deb, on this prescription issue, I think that this is another thing. She's talking about not being able to pay in the way that she could be able to pay, maybe having her insurance canceled. What does she do there?
So what we're hearing is that some of the insurance companies, and we hear the stories more about Anthem, but I think that's only as a result of the fact that Anthem has most of the consumers in our state. Some of the companies are having a little trouble with processing the payments. What I've encouraged consumers to do if they're having individual issues, like Edna is to contact the Office of the Healthcare Advocate, which is a state agency whose sole purpose is to help individual people in our state get all of the benefits from their insurance company to which they're entitled.
And we've had the healthcare advocate on the program a number of times, and we will again in the future, but I think it's a good resource here for the state. Let's get to some phone calls before we have to take our next break here. Samantha is calling. Hi, Samantha. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. Hi.
Hi.
My call is about Medicaid. So my income level was such that I had to take the Husky D. That's the only option I had. And when I signed up on the phone, the person said that I had to agree that they could go after, the state could go after any money that I might come into to cover the costs of any medical care I receive. So later on, if I inherit anything, they're not going to go after the cost, the equivalent cost of what insurance would have been. They're going to go after the cost of, like, surgery, which could be pretty hefty, you know what I mean, or a hospital stay.
Yeah.
So that could be tens of thousands of dollars if, you know, unfortunately I need that.
Samantha, thank you for sharing your story. And so what do we say to her, Deb?
I think, first of all, we want to come into money. So, but honestly, that's a situation that I believe that's a federal law, that the states do have the option of trying to recoup any of the medical expenses that they've paid out for people who do come into money, rather whether it's through an inheritance or winning the lottery or some situation like that.
Best of luck to you, Samantha. One last call before we take a break. Jean is in Bethlehem. Hi, Jean.
Hi. My situation is I am self-employed, and I have chronic health issues. And I've had my own health insurance, private health insurance, for many years at considerable cost for me and my two children. So I was thrilled when I signed up for Obamacare. I've had administrative problems. I was easily accepted, enrolled as of the first of the year. But since then, I get multiple letters asking me for different kinds of confirmation of my employment or my children's employment. Yesterday in the mail, I received four different letters, all of a conflicting nature. The one saying that I've been switched over to Husky. Another one saying that I've just been enrolled in the Silver plan for Anthem. Another one saying that I needed, two others saying that I needed different kinds of confirmation. It feels like there are chimpanzees throwing out letters.
Have you contacted the healthcare advocate at the state?
Actually, no. I just heard you say that, and that's what I'm going to do.
I think it's probably a really good idea to do, Jean. And I think that the healthcare advocate is probably been as busy as anyone else trying to help sort through some of these. I wish you best of luck with your struggles here. And Deb, before we take a break, this is another thing. I mean, there's going to be a lot of bureaucracy when it comes to health insurance anyway, as we all know, even if we've been on an employer's plan for years and years and years. But it seems as though for some people, at least, this has been risen to a new level.
Yeah, we are hearing stories of multiple letters coming in. We're not sure why that's happening. And obviously, it's confusing for consumers. It's frustrating. And we do want to make sure that the process is a little bit more smooth next year with the actual having of the insurance as well as the enrollment.
When we come back, we're going to get a little check-in here, some benchmarking in the state of Vermont and the state of Maryland to find out how their health insurance exchanges have been working so far and what they have planned for the future. We'll take more of your calls as well with Deb Paul on 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on tomorrow's program, are America's suburbs becoming unnecessary or undesirable? We'll talk with author Lee Gallagher about her book, The End of the Suburbs, Where the American Dream is Moving. We'll also take a look at the present and future of urban design and its impact on our well-being. That's tomorrow's conversation, Where We Live. Today in the program, we're getting a bit of an Obamacare update, an ACA check-in as we get ready for a new enrollment period. We've been hearing from a lot of people who've had some good experiences and some not good experiences trying to figure out the new health care law. Deb Poland is with us. She's from the Community Health Center Association of Connecticut. But I want to turn to a few reporters who've been covering this issue in their states. Meredith Cohn is a health reporter for the Baltimore Sun. Morgan True is a healthcare reporter for VT Digger. That's a website that covers Vermont. Morgan and Meredith, welcome to Where We Live. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
No problem.
First of all, I'm going to turn to you, Meredith, because Maryland is a state that seems so impressed with the way Connecticut is running its health care exchange that it's decided to work with Connecticut on this. What can you tell us about Connecticut and Maryland and working together to build a new website for your state?
Sure. So Maryland was very enthusiastic about the Affordable Care Act, but it built a website that did not work. It crashed on the first day and never really worked properly after that. So it needed some new technology, so it shopped around. It couldn't use the federal site because it needed to enroll Medicaid recipients. And so that pointed it toward Connecticut. And so it's borrowed this technology, which is free to other states to use because the federal government paid for it. They'll spend about $43 million to retrofit it to work in Maryland. Now, in Connecticut, you can't directly enroll in Medicaid yet either, but the possibility is there. The potential is there. So Connecticut and Maryland are both working on that aspect. And I think Connecticut marketed its services as consultants because your website worked much better than Maryland's. They chose not to officially hire the Connecticut officials, but I know that they've been advising Maryland on getting the website up and running in the fall.
Obviously, the website is just one piece of this. What are some of the other stories that you're hearing, Meredith, from people in Maryland as they want to sign up for Obamacare? They want to get into these new healthcare exchanges, but maybe they've been unable to. What are the big trends that are happening in your state?
Well, it's the same as in other states. Maryland's obviously were a little worse because the website didn't work. But, you know, getting those letters that some of your callers were talking about, you know, saying they needed to provide more information about their income. And as we go into the fall, we'll see how smoothly this goes with signing people up. You know, and keeping people who signed up last year, whether they'll have to, you know, sign up again, whether it will roll right over. So it's kind of unknown now what will happen in the fall kind of across the country.
Morgan True, how about in the state of Vermont? You've spent some time reflecting on this first enrollment period.
Yep.
What have been some of the successes and failures so far?
Well, I think that one of the successes was getting people into the system. The Navigator Associations here in Vermont did a really good job of helping people sign up. But then once people were in the system, I think that there was sort of a bit of a disregard for the digital divide. I mean, I think that people were getting email notices. People were getting conflicting letters like callers have talked about. And so there wasn't just a good syncing up of those type of communications. And one of the things that happened here was Medicaid is being done through the portal, which is called Vermont Health Connect. And tons of people that had been on Medicaid before the Affordable Care Act were receiving email notices that they had to use the website or just letters directing them to the website. And that was not what they were used to. And so they're trying to go back to paper forms and get consistent with the noticing in paper forms for this next open enrollment period so people aren't confused and so that there can be a smoother process, because it was the same thing here in Vermont where people would get very confused. They were getting the wrong invoice. They weren't getting an invoice. They were getting letters from their insurance company and the state that were confusing to them. So similar situation, but I think the focus has sort of shifted to making sure until the IT systems are, you know, ironed out, that there is a sort of manual process there to help people enroll. And I will say that Vermont did look at using Connecticut's technology as well, but weren't able to. And they actually just parted ways with the main technology vendor, CGI, who was building their exchange and has had trouble in multiple states. But they actually had a pretty amicable split. And I don't think that there will be any lawsuits back and forth like you see in Oregon now, where Oregon is suing its primary technology vendor, and the primary technology vendor is suing Oregon. So,
you know, it's amazing. Yeah, watching Oregon's entire system kind of fall apart, send some messages around the country about how not to run a state healthcare exchange. I'm wondering, Deb Poland, as you hear Morgan say, you know, Vermont was looking at the Connecticut system, hearing Meredith say, you know, they're signing up, Connecticut is going to run the Maryland system. Are you surprised that we're one of the models here?
I'm actually not surprised. I think Access Health Connecticut has generally done a very good job with technology. The website isn't perfect. The portal isn't perfect. It did crash a couple of times during the year. But definitely looking across the country at both the federal website and the state-based websites, Connecticut did emerge as a leader.
Meredith, the expectations, I would assume, are fairly high for the state of Maryland as you head into this next round with a brand new website, hopefully with a little bit of technological help from Connecticut. You have an awful lot of people who live in Maryland who work in the federal government and who see very closely what's going on and probably are rooting for this Obamacare thing to work. What are some of the expectations going into this next year?
There are a lot of people that are watching this very closely, a lot of people who wanted to go to the federal site because it was working so well. Move to Connecticut is being very closely watched. Governor here, Martin O'Malley, is talking about running for president, so he'd like to have something that's working that he can point to and say is a success. So a lot of eyes. So this Medicaid piece, we'll see if the people can actually sign up in private plans and sign up in Medicaid in the fall.
Well, and there's a Medicaid problem to report on from Vermont as well. We read, Morgan, that a lot of Medicaid beneficiaries not been reviewed for renewed coverage.
Yeah.
Tell us about this problem quickly.
So that was sort of what I was talking about is people that were at or near the federal poverty level and that weren't part of the Medicaid expansion, who had been receiving the same sort of renewal letter every year for probably multiple years, then received a letter saying go on to this new website and enroll that way. And either people were not able to use the website because in Vermont, if you put in an abbreviation for your address or any small thing like that, you can end up in a what they call a change of circumstance situation where you have to go through their call center to make changes to your coverage or just changes to your information. And there's about 14,000 of those that they have to work through with people on the phone. And so close to 20,000 people, and Vermont's a very small state, so those might not sound like big numbers, but they're comparatively big here, didn't renew their Medicaid coverage, and they continue to have similar problems. Invoices went out late this month and things like that, and people get confused. One thing that I'd just like to call people's attention to that's coming up after open enrollment is that this is a tax program, that these are premium tax credits. And so if people have changes in income, those definitely need to get reported, and they just have to keep in their mind that this is, even though it's being advanced to them, this is a tax program and there will be reconciliation. And I know there are tax prep specialists here in Vermont that are concerned that people don't have a good grasp of that and aren't going to be ready at tax time.
Morgan True is a healthcare reporter for VT Digger. Meredith Kahn is a health reporter for the Baltimore Sun. Thank you both so much for joining us. I really appreciate your insights into this.
Sure thing.
We were going to talk to someone from Massachusetts today, but the Massachusetts Health Connector is hosting a board meeting even as we speak to discuss that state's recent decision to stick with its current healthcare insurance website. And so all of the reporters who cover that are pretty much in that conference call right now. We'll report back on that later. Very quickly, Tony, you're in Manchester. You've just got about 30 seconds, Tony. Sorry. Oh, and Tony went away from us. Hopefully we'll get Tony's story at some other time. So, Deb, in just the last 30 seconds or a minute or so that we have, what else do you want to leave people with? As we head into this next open enrollment period, there's probably a whole lot of people are wondering what they need to do to get signed up or to get under the next phase, actually getting treated here under Obamacare.
So the first thing is to remember that open enrollment this year does not start on October 1st like it did last year. It's a shortened open enrollment period that starts November 15th and goes through February 15th. So it's only 3 months instead of 6 months. And during those 3 months, there will be people who need to renew and people who need to get on for the very first time. So it's a very shortened time frame to get a lot done. The health centers are there to help. And as Morgan mentioned, this is a tax issue for consumers as well. So we are working with the VITA program, which is Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, to really help people who maybe have never filed taxes before and people who are getting these tax credits to figure out exactly how to reconcile when it comes to tax time.
Deb Poland is Director of Government Affairs and Media Relations for Community Health Center Association of Connecticut. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. I appreciate it. We'll check back in on this because there's a lot of work to be done.
Thank you so much, John.
Thank you so much. Our program is produced by Lydia Brown and Tucker Ives. The executive producer is Katie Tolarski. I'm John Dankowski, and this is Where We Live.